Hello and welcome back to the Brew and Bright Show. My name is Craig and this is part two of our extended show, where we are joined not only by our panel, but the wonderful columnist of the Mac Observer, Nancy Gravely, and not forgetting podcaster, writer and Mac expert, Jeff Gurmett. And today we are discussing automation on the Mac. Does anybody have any thoughts on what they would consider should be automation or what isn't automation or why you would use it?
Some automation is automatic that you don't think about it. So it's little things that make your life much easier and you don't realise how easy they make your life until they don't work. So I've recently had a problem. Normally, I unlock my MacBook with my watch and for some reason, who knows why, it stopped working. And I tried not to be a big girly about it, but I was, because it was very irritating. And okay, I have a short password. I can type it in. I'm an adult. I know how to do it. But just the mere fact that when I opened the lid, it didn't open, you know, and start automatically was very irritating. So good automation is something that you notice when it isn't there. It just makes your life that little bit easier. So there are things I do, like, you know, I use in mail, I might have message rules where I direct certain things into certain folders because I know that's what I want. That's really good.
In coming up with some ideas of what our discussion was going to be, I had an idea of trying to break automation down into five things. So I don't know who or who's not going to agree with me. The way I looked at it was work more efficiently as number one, save time and hours for number two, reduce repetitive tasks, create a workflow, and maximize the use of the device you have at hand.
I think that's an awesome list. I would add to that, improve accuracy.
That's great. There are some things that are actually built into Mac OS without needing to go and start downloading apps and add-ons. I don't know if anybody wants to talk about their experience of automation on the OS.
Well, I'll kick off with a little one I did. Automator is a nifty little app built into Mac, but it can be slightly daunting. People think, well, how do I do it? What do I do? Is it? Oh, it's coding. So therefore, I want to steer clear of it. But it is a useful little app. I had a problem with importing images. I've got different cameras, so if I imported from the Canon, they would come as an IMG underscore and then a number. If it was the GoPro, it had a different layout. But because I had three different Canons, the first time it happened was I downloaded some shots from one of my other cameras, just hit the import button, and of course the images overwrote all the images I had in there previously, losing them for me. And in them days, I didn't back up properly the images, so I lost a whole load of images, which turned out to be important later on. So what I did was I set up and created a small little automator script now. So what happens is as soon as I plug a card or a camera into the system, it automatically switches on. It downloads all of those files into a folder, which is called an input photo folder, and it gives them a unique number. So now it doesn't matter which camera I plug in, which source I get them from, even if someone sent me them from on a memory stick. I know that everything in that input folder is categorized with a new unique number. It's not going to overwrite anything. It's not going to destroy anything. It's not going to make any mistakes. And then from that input folder, I can then take them either into Aperture or Photos or Photoshop or whatever I want to do with them. But it saves me that threat and worry that I'm going to overwrite something already on the system. And that's just a small demonstration of what Automator can do. So that if you have repetitive tasks, if you have something that you do on a regular basis, then setting up a little automator script can really be a godsend for you.
I had an automator script that I used for years when I had a regular column in a magazine. You remember back when we had magazines? Oh, good times. Anyhow, so my regular column included the text file and all of the graphics that would go along with the column. And so what I did was I set up an automator action that would run based on the file that I've currently selected, because I added it to the contextual menu for when you click on a document, and it would grab that document that and then go and grab all the graphics out of the specific folder that I would use when I was setting up the images for that column, bunch everything together into a new folder, and then compress that, generate a new email, attach it to the email, have the correct email address in it, put in the subject with the date that's correct for the month, and have whatever message needed to go along with it already set. So all I had to do was select this one file from a contextual menu, say send my column, and then click send in the mail app. And it was great. And my column was correct every month. I never had a problem with the editor sending me a message saying, hey, you forgot this one thing. And it was awesome.
That using Automator is wonderful if you know what you're doing. But a lot of people are terrified of Automator. I've tried to teach people how to use it before, even to the point of showing them where scripts were already written that they could go find on the internet. If a person is in that category, and basically I'm in that category, there's nothing wrong with a third-party app. I use Text Expander. Now, I work 7 days a week, okay? I'm so blessed. I work 7 days a week entering data and information, the same things over and over and over again, because I'm responding to tickets that come in from somebody. I mean, with Text Expander, I've created all of this, you know, probably 30 different codes or sentences or instructions. And if I have to use this one, I just put in the number 5 and a word. If I have to use this one, I put in a number 5 and another word. And it just all goes in there. And it probably saves me. If I work a 3-hour night, it saves me a good 45 minutes. And as Jeff said, it's accurate, because nothing makes people madder when you answer a tech support ticket than to get the wrong information. They'll write back and say, did you read anything I said? I can't say enough about what an asset that is for people who don't have a whole lot of computer skills or don't have a whole lot of technical skills. I guess is a better way to put it. And the good thing about it is you're making up your own messages. And so if you're English, you use English terms. If you're Italian, you use Italian terms, and everything's individualized. And I wish more people knew about it. And everybody doesn't need it. But people who do newsletters, people who do the kind of work I do, so I just think it's fantastic.
Well, I fully back you in your use of Text Expander, Nancy. I use it a hell of a lot. I'm in the building industry, so there's an awful lot of technical paragraphs that have to be inserted into quotes and letters and reports. And instead of having to write out that whole paragraph, then a simple X part will put in a whole subject about partitions. And then I can just choose, I've got the 6 different types of partitions, so I can just X part 1, X part 2, X part 3, and that's it. That section is done. Move on to the next bit. So like Craig's list, accurate, quick, saves time, gets around my awful spelling. It's you know, very easy, and that's just one aspect of it. But I must admit, there are, I think, something like Automator has the same kind of fear factor to people that was once associated with teleconferencing and Zoom and Excel spreadsheets. But more and more people are using them. And I must admit, as Jeff pointed out today, the resources on something like YouTube, you can practically find almost any demonstration of any given subject, whatever, somewhere on YouTube. Somewhere has already done it and posted it. So I think that if it remove people's fear of Automator and automation, it is great, because it just opens up a whole raft of other things you can do. And I say, it just saves you all that time. So please have a look at it. And don't be frightened of it. The worst thing that goes wrong is it just won't work. But have a look at it. There's some good training systems out there. Apple is not too bad on their training, but it's a bit wordy. But go onto YouTube. There's lots of good advice and guidelines there about how to set up automated scripts.
I don't know if any of you have come across a guy called Sal Sagayon. He wrote a book called AppleScript 123 by Peach Pit. And he also did a series of YouTube videos called MacBreak Work. He's the guy who set up Automator in Apple. So he's the originator and did all the stuff. And he was talking about And did you know the little robot, his actual name is Otto, and it's a he, because he says an awful lot of the stuff, because it's single tasking, so it's a he, and anything it's multitasking is a she. So that's why he's called Otto. Also, he said that one of the best things to look at is something called Watch Me Do. So you do the action, and you click record, and it records what you're doing, and then you can go back and look at what it's done, because as much as I've got the book and I can read it and I can understand it, I'm technical, I wanted to know how to put it in the right order. It's a bit like cooking. If you put it in the wrong order, you don't make a very good soup. So if you do Watch Me Do, it shows you in which order to do it. And the other thing I came across was something called If Then That, which is the big American one, which I was using because I was organizer, and I was getting an awful lot of emails coming in from Google, from a company called Niantic at the time. And I wanted to go into one of three folders, and then I could send it out because these folders were being shared to different individuals, and then we'd get categories based on it and other people doing it. And I didn't want to get somewhere in the region of what I think there's 700 emails which came into all this, and they could come in simultaneously at the same time. And I wanted it to go into one of the three categories. So I used automation very simply on that, but I didn't want to automize it too much. I mean, I think the most I use automation on my Mac is probably in iTunes. I say I rate piece of music once between 1 star and 5 star. Then I have a series of smart folders, which basically say, if this piece of music is 1 star, put it in the 1 star folder. If this music is that, and then I'll put in the show notes, Merlin Mann's magic playlists. So it says, if you've got a 3 star piece of music which you've played in the last 3 months, put it in this folder. If you've played it and you skipped it 3 times, put it in this other folder. So I have a series of like what I call like radio playlists. So I've got one which says top 100 songs, no skip. I have another one which says no words. So it's just music without any singing or anything. So when I'm doing workforce, and believe it or not, Spotlight is automator as well. It's Apple script running in the background. So press Command Spacebar, that gets you Spotlight, and that activates one tiny element of Apple script, which is automator. And it's the one bit of automator which very few people know is actually automator.
It's interesting because going forward, how far automator has come. So automator has kind of been put in the subfolder of systems on the latest builds of macOS, that there are a lot of things that we use on a daily basis that started in Automator. So now, like example being on Big Sur, you can right click and rename all the files in one folder. That's all based off of an Automator script from years ago.
Alistair, when you brought up Sal Segoyan and AppleScript 123, it just warmed my heart, because first, Sal is so awesome. He is a fantastic person, and he's the ultimate resource on, in my opinion, on automating on the Mac. But you also mentioned If This Then That, and while that's not an Apple specific automation tool, it's one that I rely on a lot, and I use it to do a lot of different things. One of the things that it does for me, it automates my window air conditioners in my apartment, because my place is built in 1903, which by US standards is old. And so it has windows that are narrower than standard for today, which means that I have to have these small window air conditioners, which have no controls other than high, low, on, off. So I put in Wemo switches, they're smart switches, just plugged them into outlets, plugged the air conditioners into those, and then have If This Then That check the temperature from my Ecobee thermostat, and if it's registering as high enough, then it turns on the Wemo switch. And then when the temperature drops low enough in my apartment, the Ecobee registers that, and then If This Then That turns the Wemo switch back off, which is great. So now I have a smart air conditioner, and it's all managed through If This Then That, using technology that's in my apartment. And it's it just completely changed how I manage the temperature in the summer, but also really cut down on costs because I don't have to leave an air conditioner running all the time and I don't have to pay attention myself. It's just the automation tools handling it for me.
And you didn't have to pay $300 for a Nest thermostat.
No, I didn't. I did buy an Ecobee thermostat, but you know, I already had it, so it's not like I was spending extra.
Yeah.
Jeff, have you ever tried using any of the other competitors to If and That, like Zapier?
I use Zapier as well, but I use it for different things. So I use If This Then That primarily to make different services and devices talk to each other. I use Zapier to make different data work together. And for some people, that's a very subtle difference. For me, it's a huge thing. And yeah, with Zapier, I can grab data that's coming in through like a form on a Google Sheet that I've set up as a web form. And then it can grab that data and process it and put it into an Airtable, but then also maybe set up a new post on a WordPress blog or send someone an email and then collect data from different locations and put it together so that I can work with it in different ways. So yes, I like Ift for specific things and Zapier for other things. There's a couple others out there that I'm just totally drawing a blank on names on right now that I'm just beginning to dabble with just to see what else I can do.
Do any of you use anything other than Apple's Mail app?
Sometimes I use Thunderbird because I have to set up email peculiar rules sometimes. So sometimes if someone's got a really old archaic email system, it doesn't work with Apple's state-of-the-art security system. So someone may have had email for 25 years going through the same server in the same part of the world, and Apple with its state-of-the-art security doesn't like it because you have to manually tick certain boxes or untick certain boxes. So Thunderbird works very well on that side, and Postbox I've discovered as well.
The reason I asked that is in the last month, after 15 and a half years of using Mail, I've finally stopped using it. I like using Mail, but the thing that frustrated me the most in terms of automation was that the Apple rules don't always work, or they're not very evident. I made the switch and I chose to install Airmail, which I don't know if any of you have come across that.
Mm-hmm. Airmail's a cool app. I've tried a lot of different email apps. Yeah, and I liked Airmail. I've actually ended up always going back to Apple's Mail, even though I don't think it's the best, but it's the one that lets me do everything that I need to do. Because I use mail tags from Smallcubed, but I also need an email application that supports email aliases correctly and lets me do encryption. And to have all of those features together, the only app that does that is Mail. I have to give up stuff other places. So even though I know that I should be able to get a better email experience outside of Mail, I have to go back to it just because it supports all the things that I need to do.
Part of the reason I looked at Airmail was that what I liked anyway was that you can actually snooze it. So you don't have to be disturbed throughout the day. You can set a time when and where you want to deal with email. You can actually transfer Apple rules across and they do actually work this time around. The other thing that I quite liked was the scheduling. So I don't know if you noticed this, but when I sent you both an email based in the US, you're obviously on a different time zone, and I didn't want to be bothering you at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. So I wrote my email out, and then I scheduled it to a reasonable time for you to open it and read it.
I assumed that you just don't sleep, or you sleep at weird times. Just based on the timestamp on it. Seriously, it didn't occur to me that you were using a scheduling tool, which is actually good. That's how it should be.
The interesting thing is it also has some privacy questions, which could and couldn't bother you. It depends on how you consider privacy again in this discussion. The interesting thing is, like Apple Mail, you can install GPG Suite, so you can actually encrypt your email going back and forth. The interesting question somebody brought up with this is that in order to use their service, they actually import your mail onto their servers to then send it back out to you. So they are actually skimming through it. There isn't a clear definition of what their privacy and data is in regards to that. But if you're encrypting your email anyway, they don't have the key. So they're just going to see scrambled information. But that is an interesting one to look at, especially if you're going to consider a third-party app deal with mail.
How do they deal with plugins such as spam?
So they actually all work. They actually have far more integration than I expected, to be honest. They have things like, if you write towards a Slack channel, it will populate in a Slack channel. It will send out a tweet based on certain settings. You literally have to, it's really easy to use in that regard. You can just go into the preferences panel of that, and there are actually bolt-ons or add-ons that you just tick boxes to activate different services. There is a Today view. It is available on iOS, and it uses Face ID and touch. The interesting one that I built with is I played around with the multi-touch bar on iOS and Mac, and found that you could program your swipes dependent on different things. Being a photographer, I get lots of emails. So I get common repetitive questions, which Text Expander is great for answering all of those. A nice one that I came across was that if someone sends me an email, time that you actually waste every day of looking, oh, who is this person's name on the email before you type out the answer? Something like this can actually grab the first name out of the email address and put dear to, or how are you, Graham, Richard, Brian. It automatically picks it up and again saves us far more time and efficiency.
I actually have a Text Expander script that does that on the Text Expander thing. The nature of what I do, I often get asked if I can send a bio and a headshot to different publications, organizations, whatever. So that's now in Text Expander, or has been for a long time. So if they need a long bio or a short bio, I have different snippets for that. And then I actually have my headshot graphic as a Text Expander snippet. So I don't even go to another folder to find it. I have a couple different headshots depending on what they need. And I just type my abbreviation. And now there's my bio and the headshot that they need, and I'm done.
Do you use any other services like that? Something that I've been exploring is Hook. I don't know if you've come across that.
I've played a tiny bit with Hook, and I need to make the time to really get into it, because that's one of those services that Brett Terpstra told me about. And if it's something that Brett likes, then I know I need to check it out. So Hook, just from his endorsement, Hook is great.
Yeah, it seems extremely powerful what you can do with it. It's just one of those things that you need time to explore what you can do with it. It's a bit of a learning curve, I think.
Yeah, the other one that I'm starting to mess with a little bit now is adding JavaScript to IFT recipes. And actually, I think in some cases, I'll be able to replicate what I'm doing with Zapier in IFT just by writing some JavaScript, or stealing JavaScript and modifying it, whatever. Same thing.
Does anybody automate anything to do with calendars?
Well, other than putting in the regular LMUG meeting on the second Monday of each month, that's the first thing you have to do to make sure it, because it obviously changes with the calendars, depending on the months, number of weeks, all that sort of thing. So that's a good example of an awkwardly recurring date that you have to book in maybe for 12 months ahead. So something like that. Automated can be something useful for that, especially if you're receiving invitations for attendance to training programs and things like that, which vary at different times. Again, I've got a simple little script. As soon as this comes in from I know the source, it automatically sets up a data in the calendar, and then it sets up reminders both 2 weeks, 1 week, and the day before to make sure I don't forget it.
Do you know what I do when I try and not forget things?
I set a reminder and then I share it to the HomePod so that the HomePod announces it.
That's really smart. That's really smart.
Yeah, it'll hit 12 o'clock lunchtime and it will say, you need to email blah, 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 or you have not replied to. It's just a clever way of a voice activation, because a lot of people don't realize you can voice activate a lot of automations too. Siri has opened up a whole new ball game to that too.
So when I teach in a local college, I set up, because my back is to the, we're doing like a projector to a classroom. And so I'm facing the class and I can't see what's behind me on the projector, and the projector is connected to the Mac. So I set up, so it reads all the alerts. And then of course, being sort of Monty Python fan, I put like, you know, it's not my fault. The printer's not collected. I can't print. And, you know, is anyone out there? And stuff. And I turn up the volume slightly. So when I'm in the class, it will read out what's behind me. And I don't have to. And it makes a brilliant sort of introduction to, look, this is automation. You know, I don't have to. And the computer's got a sense of personality. So
that's fantastic.
Hey, Craig, how do you set that thing up with your HomePod to remind you?
Oh, that's a good question. I have two ways of doing it. So first of all, I will get an email with the date and time come in as a reminder. And I actually have an iOS shortcut that pulls the date and time and contact details of a person. So it will share it to the iPhone. And then the iPhone actually sets up a shortcut automation for the HomePod. I don't know, have you used any shortcuts? So a whole other basket of automation is with the iPhone. Shortcuts have become a massive thing recently as well. I actually have a location-based one. I think I mentioned this before. So when I leave my house and I get a certain distance away, my phone knows to turn off the Wi-Fi.
Oh, that's interesting.
We tried to use HomeKit, and my great accomplishment so far is that I've got one set of lights that I can tell Siri to turn on and off. That only took me like 2 days. But it worked.
That's exciting, though.
It is exciting. It is exciting. I just wish I could make the ones that are just like it, but don't work. But I have a built-in secret. I have a kid who works for Apple. And so sooner or later, she's going to need something. So she'll come over and I'll get her to fix it. But it's really amazing. And I know Jeff's whole house is automated like that. But I have an apartment, so I can't do things like control the air conditioning, that kind of stuff, because I can't install a new thermostat. But
Nancy, I have a workaround for you on that. Yeah, the way I started my whole air conditioner thing, it was before I had the Ecobee thermostat, and just so you know, I'm actually living in an apartment, and the property management company, when I told them that I wanted to put this new thermostat in, they're like, "That's so cool, do it." And we're actually going to send our HVAC people out to make sure that everyone's furnace is wired correctly. So if they want to do it too, they can. But before I had that, I used IFT with the Wemo switch. And so what I did was I knew about how hot it would be outside when I needed to have an air conditioner turn on inside. So I set up an IFT recipe that checked the local weather on a regular basis and would look to see if the outside temperature was above whatever that threshold was. And if it was, then it would turn on that window air conditioner through the Wemo switch for me.
One that I was proudest of was I set up a Tesco basket note and in notes. And now all I have to say is, hey, lady, add Brussels sprouts to the Tesco basket note. What I then did was I then geotagged the Tesco store. So when I'm driving into the car park, up pops a reminder saying, what have you forgotten? And I can look at my note and there is Brussels sprouts. So, but that was connected two or three different bits. Yes, it took me 2 days, like you, Nancy, to get it actually working right. It kept going off in the middle of the doctor's surgery saying I needed Brussels sprouts, which wasn't the best thing to do. And finally, of course, I'd walk into Tesco's and they say you get your hemorrhoids injection. So you have to get it right, otherwise it doesn't, you know. But once you do, there is that sense of accomplishment that I'm actually getting my Brussels sprouts at the right place.
The sense of accomplishment is tremendous, and I really want to get to the point where I can teach other people how to do the simple stuff, but I'm not there yet.
Recommendation that I'm sure that all of you will find useful, or you may even have already found it. There's one free automation that's useful for Apple users for sure, and you can download it in the Apple Store app. So the next time you are trying to buy a HomePod or a new iPhone, there is a availability script. So you can literally say, "Hey Siri, when can I buy a HomePod?" It shows your local store and when and where it's going to be available, and can you collect it or how long you've got to wait.
That's really cool.
Sadly, we have run out of time for this week's show, but a special thanks to our guests and, of course, our lovely panel.
Shall we say goodbye to... Who's going to be first? Any takers? Go for it, Tina.
Really interesting to hear everyone talk. I've learnt a lot. Have a lovely weekend or whenever you listen to this podcast.
Thank you. We'll speak to you soon. And thank you very much for Alistair's insight, as always. We'll speak to you next time.
It's been very interesting listening to you both, Jeff and Nancy, and getting a different take on technology. So it's been an interesting podcast and learned a lot.
Brilliant. Thank you. And we'll say good night to Martin. Thank you very much.
Good night all. Take care. Stay safe and be careful.
We shall say thank you very much for Jeff. Thank you for joining us. And I hope you enjoyed your time with us.
Well, thank you for inviting me on. I've had an absolutely wonderful time. Seriously, this has been great. And thank you for putting up with me, because I know I am personally responsible for making this drag out as long as it has.
And we'll say thank you very much to Nancy, and not forgetting her guest cat that makes an appearance.
I have enjoyed this so much, and I not only do I appreciate you asking me to participate, I doubly appreciate it after the last time I tried and I couldn't get my technology to work. So it was very nice to be here, and I've learned a lot of things that I want to follow up on now.
Thank you. That's brilliant.
Thanks for listening, everybody. You can find our past episodes of our show on our website at lmug.org.uk. Until next time, goodbye.